Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Kitchen Politics 123, the radio show. Welcome, everybody. I'm Dave Franklin in Florida. I mean, New Mexico, sorry.
Good evening, everyone. This is Lori Picka from Michigan. I hope everyone is having a good night, and we have a good show lined up tonight with a wonderful guest.
Yes, we're pleased to have in our studio today Augie Montoya, and he's running for District 22 in New Mexico, the State House District 22. So, Augie, welcome. We're glad
you're
here. Yes, man. So tell us your story.
So my name, first off, is Augustine Montoya. Thank you guys so much for having me on today. And my story takes its setting in the East Mountains of Orange County. So now that we've been redistricted as of December, nearly the exact borders of this district are my romping grounds from the time I was little to the current. And so I was born and raised in Boquerica, New Mexico. My family's been here since before the 1800s. We own a family-owned business doing fuel firewood and working with our Forest Service to make sure that we're being good stewards of the land and protecting our forests and our land.
Oh, good, good.
I additionally went to Wisconsin Municipal Schools till my sophomore year of high school, and then I inevitably graduated from East Mountain High School with an honors diploma in foreign language and ran for the University of West Alabama, all while working for the Soil and Water Conservation District, and then ultimately graduated from UNM now in December.
Okay, a political science degree.
With liberal arts. Well, liberal arts. Together my political science degree with Chicano Chicano
State. Okay, gotcha. So what decided to make you run?
So I decided to run after watching my community and seeing the real issues that are causing suffering to rural New Mexicans. Overall economic opportunity, water sovereignty and equity, land conservation, as well as infrastructure and roads have pressured our rural communities in a way that has made it very complicated to live in rural New Mexico. And so I wanted to see a voice that was raised and brought up in the community, understanding the fundamental issues we face and working to abridge the urban-rural divide, as well as make policy and legislation that helps us move forward and advance as a state.
Okay, gotcha. Yes, Lori, you're on.
Hi.
What question do you have for guests?
Hi, Augustine. How are you this evening?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good here in Michigan. It's been a windy, cold day, but we're surviving. My question to you is this. Is your campaign a populist movement that appeals to voters of varying political spectrums?
So in short, yes. Our campaign is people-driven, and it's intended to contact every member of our community as is possible. And the reason that is because for us to really make quality change in our communities, we have to be willing to bridge the division that we've experienced in this country, experienced in the district, and experienced as a result of this partisan political process that's happened over our history. And so this movement is intended to contact everybody and bring us to an area and a space where we can properly discuss and hash out issues and solutions for our community.
Okay, that's wonderful.
Okay, so do you, when you run for this office, it's a conservative district, you know, what are your plans, the three main goals of your campaign, what do you hope to accomplish?
Gotcha. So the three main goals of my campaign are water sovereignty and equity, responsible economic development, as well as investing in our infrastructure and roads.
Okay.
And so those are some pretty broad platform points, but they break down further. So when we talk about water sovereignty and equity, there's a couple of different approaches we can take. One of my priorities is to make sure that our state departments and agencies are fully funded. And one of my favorites to talk about are soil and water conservation districts, because I did work there through high school, shadowing professionals in the field and understanding what exactly our districts do to conserve our water. So that's one point under water. Then responsible economic development. also generating opportunity for our communities in a way that's going to be sustainable for our Main Street economy.
Mm-hmm.
And then in unison with that, we also have infrastructure, things like broadband internet service and access, because rural New Mexicans and rural students really need and are asking for the resources to be successful in and outside of the classroom.
Yes, okay.
So, Augustine, what I'm wondering is the area that you live in, I'm not familiar with Torrance County, New Mexico at all. Is it more of a rural area? How populated is it?
Yes, ma'am. So it is a rural area. So Torrance County particularly has a population of 15,500. The 100 number is an estimate, but the 15,000 is accurate. Also, our district covers part of Bernalillo County, which is a little bit more populated. It's suburban ex-rural. And what it makes our population go up to is a total population of 30,820 people living in House District 22.
Okay. That explains. That's awesome. Okay. I was just wondering.
So
I have no idea, you know, if it was a city, if it's a little town or, you know, that's, I'm glad you explained that.
Thank you.
Yeah, so water is life. It is important that people have it. What are your thoughts on solar and alternate energy?
I think for us to really take a strong stance against climate change, we have to be willing to accept the fact that we have to change what we're doing now. Particularly hitting close to home, we see that water sovereignty and equity is impacted by climate change. It's estimated that there's an expiration date on our aquifer of something like 2040. And our aquifer, it's a closed basin, meaning that the water in there is very finite, and that resource, once it's gone, it's going to take an extremely long time for it to replenish, if it does.
Okay.
And so when I take a stance on alternative energy or renewable energy, it's my view that it's a good economic opportunity for our state, as long as we are ingenuitive with how we bring that opportunity and how we incentivize that without over-incentivizing or over-regulating. In addition to that, I think that solar power and wind power can drive our economy in a way that's different because it will allow us to bring a different sector of education that may be here but needs to be expanded upon. And so we can hit on areas of education, we can hit on areas of economy, and we can also hit on areas of infrastructure when it comes to that green energy, and all in a way that conserves and protects our water.
Okay, got you. I think we have a call coming in. Let's see who's this caller. Hello, caller. Welcome to Kitchen Politics 123. From 231 error code. I guess the person rather listen. Yeah, sometimes our calls are coming and the people are too shy to say anything.
Oh, well, I appreciate you.
So who influenced you growing up? Tell us what it was like growing up.
So you know the phrase that they use, it takes a village to raise a child? That's kind of the concept here. So the people in my district all really profoundly influenced me. You know, I come from a wood hauling area, so most of my family are in wood hauling. If they're not, they're in some form of hard labor. Or, you know, in an area that involves hands to really get the work done. And so watching that grow up, growing up, it allowed me to see that there is value in a hard day's work. And those are the people that really influenced me in unison with my educators. My educators were really effective at conveying to me that I can do more and instilling me that hope. That, you know, there is a way to pull myself out of generational poverty, but there's also a way for my other people to do that as well. And so, you know, that's in unison at the Santa Municipal Schools. I had some of my most impactive and impactful teachers there. But also at East Mountain High School, I had an extremely amazing opportunity to really see that I can do things to help my community and pursue a mission that's greater than just myself.
Gotcha.
Very nice. I have a question for you, Augustine.
Yes, ma'am.
Are you ready?
Yeah, as ready as I can be.
You are my favorite. I have to say, you are my favorite generation right now, Gen Z. You know that,
Thank you. Yes, ma'am.
And I have such high hopes for Gen Z. I talked about them a couple times on the show. I think that they are very I think they're going to be the ones that are going to be taking over our country, but in a wonderful way. So,
yes, ma'am.
You're running for the first time, right? And what are your thoughts about the current American politics that we have right now? What's going on right now? What are your thoughts as a Gen Z or just, you know, as someone running?
As somebody running and as, you know, a member of this generation as a Gen Zer,
mm-hmm.
I see that we have a real-time obligation to abridge the divide that we're seeing built in America today. I understand that I stand in my democratic values and I'm unwavering in that fact.
Mm-hmm.
However, we need to now start working towards an area of communication that opens up channels for us to come together as people in a way that is meaningful and insightful to not only legislation, but to society as a whole. It's my profound belief that I have an obligation to my community to invest into it what I would like seen invested into me. It's kind of the principle of do unto others as you'd like done unto yourself.
Yes.
If I'm going to approach somebody, whether I agree with them or not, I still live in this community. I still live in this space with them, and I'm still inhabiting and cohabitating in one space.
Okay.
And so as a Gen Zer running, I think we have a real opportunity to adjust how we communicate with each other and bring our communities together in a way that's going to be effective.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Yeah, you were telling me earlier that your father is Cuban and your mother...
My mother.
Your mother is...
My mom's half Cuban.
Half Cuban, okay, and her side is Mexican.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, what was it like growing up? Do you have any siblings or you're an only child?
Gotcha. I actually have one sister and now a niece. I'm so thankful for my niece. Her birthday was April 1st.
Okay.
And growing up in my household, it was very interesting, you know, having the perspective that, yes, I'm Latino, I am Chicano, and I do come from that heritage.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, being in the space to also observe that the further away you get from immigration, the more assimilated into, you know, American culture and the more assimilated you get as a culture.
Mm-hmm.
And so really drove me to a point where I'm very proud to be brown. I'm very proud to be a person of color, though I am light-complected.
Yes.
You know, it profoundly affected my understanding of how legislation and how policy and how leaders need to move forward.
Yes.
Because my household was very open.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as a child, I wasn't ever put in a situation where if I didn't succeed, it was seen as a failure.
Mm-hmm.
It was seen as a learning opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
And so my parents were very, not necessarily strict, but they were very they held me to very high expectations because they knew that if I was going to do something, I was going to give it 100% or not do it at all.
Right.
And so that, you know, when it came to my running career, gave it 100% of my attention.
Mm-hmm.
It was dedication. It was hours of time given to that because that's what my parents expected of me.
Okay.
I chose to run and they told me, look, you're going to run the whole season. If you want to stop after the season, you can stop, but you're not cutting it out halfway through.
Yes, yes.
And so, you know, that's kind of what it was like growing up. Also with hard work and family.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we work with our hands every day.
Yeah, yeah. You know, so in high school, you know, were you into like things like Key Club, Drama Society? What was your high school days like?
Gotcha. Uh-huh. So I had two different experiences.
Uh-huh.
I went to Estancia, and most of my focus was on my academics and then running and then my animals outside of the classroom.
Yes.
And so normally my day looked like I'd get up at 4:30 in the morning, I'd go feed my animals. At 5, I'd be at practice. Then I'd go to class. And then after class, it was practice, homework, feed my animals, and back to bed. So, and then I went to East Mountain High School. And that changed it. So my senior year, I was given the opportunity to do an independent study focused in ornithology or the study of birds.
Right.
And it allowed me to really expand my universe of understanding. I did partake in science fair, both in Estancia and at East Mountain. In Estancia, I won 3 years in a row for my science fair project.
Okay.
My second time and my third time, I did a continuation of one experiment, which was based around genetics,
mm-hmm.
and I was trying to hybridize a goose and a chicken
mm-hmm.
While in the embryos.
Okay.
And so it didn't make it to state because it was a biohazard because there was blood
okay.
DNA.
Right.
So,
mm-hmm.
but, you know, that was part of it. And then at East Mountain, I also helped co-author
mm-hmm.
a book.
Oh, nice.
It was a 30-page book.
Oh.
It was part of our classes and assignment.
Mm-hmm.
And it was based in environmental science.
Okay.
Land and water conservation,
okay.
And climate change.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, going to the school at East Mountain was very different because there was a different set of opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
And I seen the differences between a public charter school
mm-hmm.
and public education.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
mm-hmm.
you know, I may not have partaken in clubs,
mm-hmm.
but I was observant. And I was aware of the issues going on around me
mm-hmm.
And just the sheer difference.
Mm-hmm.
that our children are experiencing from school district to school district.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what drove me out of the state. Of course, I went to West Alabama, and then I came back home. And,
so the culture in West Alabama compared to New Mexico, it's totally different. You know,
yeah.
Tell us about your experience in Alabama. What was it like?
Oh, my goodness. So I first went down to Alabama for a recruiting trip my
mm-hmm.
senior year over winter break in January.
Mm-hmm.
And it was nice. I'm like, I liked the weather. It was warm. It was humid. So I made the decision to go down there and run.
Mm-hmm.
So after that, I went down in July,
mm-hmm.
A couple weeks before, so I could practice with the team and,
mm-hmm.
and get acquainted with, you know, the sport
mm-hmm.
More formally at the college level.
Okay.
So, you know, weather-wise, it was good. I liked the weather.
Mm-hmm.
Culture-wise, it was very different.
Yeah.
Just the level of intensity,
mm-hmm.
I guess, that I would put, and the cultural and racial divide.
Yes.
Because in being in a part of the Bible Belt where
mm-hmm.
such heavy, heavy incidents of oppression and racism have occurred,
mm-hmm.
it affected mm-hmm. me profoundly, like even to a spiritual level.
Yes.
Because for me, I could almost feel it. I could almost
mm-hmm.
feel it in the energy, like the history of what happened in this place.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it kind of rubbed off on the people.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, not everybody. I met some great people. I met mm-hmm. some of my best friends in Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
But there were other people that I was like, oh, you just do not align with me and what I'm trying to do.
Right.
So, you know, they kind of made
mm-hmm.
it abrasive.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, you know, it wasn't horrible.
Right.
For me, others, it was a little worse, some better.
Mm-hmm.
But for me overall, it was an experience that I needed because I needed to see the true divide that we're experiencing in this country,
mm-hmm.
Especially coming from a minority-majority state
mm-hmm.
where we don't necessarily see overt racism.
Right.
We see more systematic and institutional racism.
Right.
And in Alabama,
mm-hmm.
it was overt racism.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I said, I didn't have a hard time navigating the space because I am lighter complected,
mm-hmm.
and it seems to be what you get away with more if you're lighter complected in this
right.
country, which is total BS. But,
mm-hmm.
you know, for me,
travesty.
Yeah, it's horrible. And I think Alabama
mm-hmm.
set that into perspective for me
mm-hmm.
and really invigorated me to change things.
Mm-hmm.
That was my experience in Alabama.
Okay. So you say you run, was it long distance, 800 meters, you know, 1500? What
gotcha. I was a 10K 5K athlete.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's so beautiful.
You know, I was a soccer player. I was stick with soccer. No.
I'm not coordinated enough for soccer.
Right.
That's why I ran.
5K and 10K. 10K is something like 12 laps. Or
25.
25. Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. That's how much I know.
12.1 is a 3.1
mm-hmm.
2 miles
right.
with a 5K, and then 10.2 is... Or no, sorry, 6.2 is a 10K.
Okay.
And so those were my two events that I got recruited for.
Mm-hmm.
I actually ended up specializing in the steeplechase
uh-huh.
of all things. So it's 7.5 laps.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason
wow.
I like the steeplechase is because nobody else likes doing the steeplechase.
Right, right.
So,
yeah, it's difficult. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and, you know, it's a whole other
challenge.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Because, you know, running like that, it gives you a character. Like, you know, like when you're training for it, you know, just like anything else, and you know, you build your body. It's like a mindset where it's okay, this is where you have to go, get fit, eat right food.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just like politics, you know, you listen to everybody. You don't like broadbrush a certain group saying, oh, you know, you're conservative, so I'm not going to go after your vote.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're too right wing. You know, politics is about compromise.
Yeah.
You know, and so you build coalitions everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
you know. So tell us about the campaign. Have you been building coalitions, like with churches, with civic groups?
So that's part of what we're doing right now.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, in the primary, because we are uncontested, it gives me a little bit more flexibility before
mm-hmm.
we move into the general.
Okay.
And so right now, the big part of it is talking to people,
mm-hmm.
raising money. So if you guys are out there and you guys can donate, please visit my ActBlue. It's secure.actblue.com/donate/AgustinMontoya, the number 4, New Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
And then also, yes, building coalitions, because
mm-hmm.
that's the point of this campaign. It's a people-driven campaign.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a campaign that's solely driven to raise money, and it's not a campaign solely driven to present a candidate.
Mm-hmm.
It's to elevate voices.
Yes.
And so, for example, if you go to my website, A&M, the number 4NM.com,
mm-hmm.
you can go to my platform page
mm-hmm.
and then click Read More, and
mm-hmm.
it'll give you the opportunity to join a platform committee
mm-hmm.
where you can sit down and say, look, I live in this district, and I've seen that 92 people's wells have gone dry in the
mm-hmm.
northern part of the district. What are we going to do about it?
Yes.
And it gets us all in that space
mm-hmm.
to then sit down and say, okay, what solutions can we do?
Mm-hmm.
And it allows me to also bring professionals into that space
mm-hmm.
so that way they can go home and interview their friends
mm-hmm.
and family.
Okay, gotcha.
Christine, I have one for you.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, ma'am.
Yes. Do you believe in term limits?
That's a good question because, yes, I do.
Term limits.
Yeah, I could get on my soapbox about term limits, you know, and the reason I
Let's
say that is because
I've been... I'm on there with you.
Yes,
go right ahead.
So for me, I think that term limits allow us to get fresh perspective. Seeing elected officials in office for decades and, you know, there are some elected officials who have been there as long as I've been alive.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
at some point, you have to pass on the torch
mm-hmm.
to somebody
mm-hmm.
who's coming up, because this country is only going to move forward if we are willing to bring that forward view into our legislation.
Mm-hmm.
Because then you have individuals who sit in these spaces and dominate these areas of lawmaking
mm-hmm.
and distort what it is that the American people are actually trying to say.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
so for me, I am 100% behind term limits. If I can't get my job
mm-hmm.
done in the amount of time that we set the term limits to be, well, then it's on to the next one.
Yes.
On to the next one. And if I'm really effective, then I can convey them to the next person now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because my experience with that is when I lived in Florida, there was like the older people hung on to power. I just run for one office, got to the next, climb your way up right to the federal level, and there wasn't a grooming process.
Mm-hmm.
So what I noticed now in New Mexico is that there's a grooming process,
mm-hmm.
and you know it's smoother than what Florida is. And a lot of young people are turned off against politics because of that thing where, oh, okay,
mm-hmm.
I want to run for this office, but I'm not groomed. And, you know, people say, oh, you know, you're 22 or you're 25, you know, wait your turn.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's ridiculous because nobody's entitled to the office, no matter
mm-hmm.
how long you're in there,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Well, see,
no,
like,
you're elected into that office to serve the people. And if you cannot serve the people and come through with what your goals are, then you know, it's time to go. And, you know, one
mm-hmm.
person comes
mm-hmm.
to mind for me is, you know,
mm-hmm.
Mitch McConnell. I mean, how long has that man mm-hmm. been there? You know.
Since 1982, Mitch McConnell.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, really?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and
yeah.
there's many more,
mm-hmm.
but
mm-hmm.
you know what I'm saying.
Yeah,
so,
Chuck Grassley.
Yeah.
Yeah.
yeah
he
there's
can,
many.
He's on the Democratic side. Okay, my other
yeah.
question for you. What profession, other than your own, would you want to attempt?
Gosh, you know, they say variety is the spice of life.
Uh-huh.
So I kind of ran my work life in that perspective, but it's good now that I'm young to get
mm-hmm.
bits and pieces everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what I believe I've done in both leading up to this position and going into the future.
Mm-hmm.
So for me right now,
mm-hmm.
if I could pick a profession other than my own, this
mm-hmm.
is a good question.
Mm-hmm.
A pilot.
A pilot.
A
okay.
pilot. Because
awesome.
I love the ability to see
mm-hmm.
and observe the beauty of our world
mm-hmm.
and to really take it in a very spiritual way, religious way, and very personal way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I sit out my mountain all the time because
mm-hmm.
I live right next to the mountain. I run up 30 minutes every day and 30
mm-hmm.
minutes down.
Mm-hmm.
And I get to sit down and enjoy the beauty of nature.
Mm-hmm.
And so, if I can see the nature.
Right. Yeah, enjoy the view from way up there.
Yes.
Let me see. Another question I'd like. On the opposite side of that, though, what profession would you not want to attend?
Right now, honestly, to give you an honest answer,
mm-hmm.
I would not want to be a teacher in America right now.
Mm-hmm. Because of pay
sucks.
Well, the pay sucks, uh-huh. but it's also, you know, I feel like as a result of the pay sucking,
mm-hmm.
you're watching your students suffer.
Mm-hmm.
And not necessarily because you're not doing your job, but because the government's not wanting to act
mm-hmm.
to get the job done.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, I really would not want to be a teacher in America right now, not because I don't have interest in the profession,
mm-hmm.
but because there is more to be done.
Yes.
And we have a lot of work to do in America.
Yes, they should fund public schooling.
Mm-hmm.
And what I know in America is that, you know, if you're a movie star or if you're an athlete, you know, you've been throwing a lot of money, a lot of endorsements, commercial endorsements, but teachers
mm-hmm.
are left back. Those are the people who should be getting paid.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's a travesty, really.
Yeah.
And we'll have a lot of good teachers because growing up, you know, I had some amazing teachers, you know, and
you know,
to me, that should
the
get
thing about
more.
Yeah. The mm-hmm. thing about teachers is that they can actually mold a person. You know, they
mm-hmm.
can
yeah.
actually change a person's life and perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And we do not value a teacher in this country. Right now, they're being villainized. They are being,
mm-hmm.
To put it nicely, they're just being put down. And, you know, the
mm-hmm.
curriculum that they're attacking
mm-hmm.
certain people, I don't know about New
yeah.
Mexico, but there's something going on here in Michigan. And, you know, they don't really have the control of the curriculum.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of sad that the tide is turning on teachers, on educators. Is that because they're trying
mm-hmm.
to dumb down America even more than they have? That's my worry.
Mm-hmm. Like in other words, Lori, you're asking – they're trying to whitewash American history in terms of teaching slavery.
Correct.
When you ask somebody, what's
to,
critical race theory? They don't know, but they're against it.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, so
right.
what
and
do you think about
that? Ban books,
mm-hmm.
history.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're like I said, they're villainizing teachers. And, you know,
mm-hmm.
here there was something that went on. I shouldn't even talk about it, but I'm going to because I'm going to throw it out there. But
mm-hmm.
they were saying that the kindergarten teachers are now teaching their little students, you know, sex education, which is not true.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
you know, that's just wrong. And
mm-hmm.
I don't blame you for not wanting to be a teacher right now.
Yeah, well, and so, you know, I worked this session, I was a committee assistant,
mm-hmm.
and I helped other committee assistants, which was, you know, it was very much a privilege of mine to be
mm-hmm.
able to work at the House of Representatives this past session and the
mm-hmm.
session previous.
Mm-hmm.
But we've seen a bill come through with an attempt to amend social studies curriculum
mm-hmm.
to ban critical race theory and the discussion of critical
yeah.
race theory.
Mm-hmm.
And my
yeah.
whole observation is that you cannot hide history.
Mm-hmm.
The facts
no.
are the facts.
Mm-hmm.
And there is no
yeah.
changing that.
Mm-hmm.
Slavery happened
yeah.
in this country, and the wealth of Caucasian Americans
mm-hmm.
was built off
yeah.
the backs of slaves,
mm-hmm.
no matter how you look at it. And
mm-hmm.
so, you know, for us to now not admit that
mm-hmm.
is just very much a short-sighted shortcoming
mm-hmm.
on the behalf of American education,
mm-hmm.
but on the behalf of elected officials.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, if educators had their way, I can guarantee you, for the most part,
mm-hmm.
they would be educating our children on facts.
Mm-hmm.
They wouldn't be taking
Absolutely.
A side on whether this or that did
mm-hmm.
or did not happen.
Mm-hmm.
It happened.
Yes.
And so
yeah.
mm-hmm.
that, you know, that's my whole view on critical race theory
mm-hmm.
in schools, but also the view of what has actually happened in this country and what we
yeah.
need to recognize.
Mm-hmm.
My mom
yeah.
called it shadow,
mm-hmm.
recognizing the shadow of what actually happened in this country.
Yes,
mm-hmm.
yes. Because by 2045, 2050, America going to be a minority majority.
Mm-hmm.
And I think now with these different bills Republicans proposing, trying to like cut down people's right to vote,
mm-hmm.
Intimidating them, it's
mm-hmm.
very Jim Crow.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they're trying to do everything to steal elections. And Donald Trump with the January 6th uprising.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know how that man is not in prison right now, because what he did was was against democracy. This is not what America stands for,
mm-hmm.
you know. So, you know, I don't know if it would be past my place to ask you what you think about, you know, what happened January 6th, how we can avoid things like that in the future.
Well, I think it's on behalf of our politicians.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Americans were led to that point.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't just up and decide to have an uprising.
Mm-hmm.
They were led to that point. And, you know, the conservative end of things agrees with him. I don't.
Mm-hmm.
I fundamentally think that if we are going to do the job of the people, whether that's at the federal level or the state level,
mm-hmm.
we should never lead to the point in which people are getting hurt.
Mm-hmm.
Physical violence, in my observation, regardless if it's to bring perspective or adjust the lens of the governing body,
mm-hmm.
should never be done by a means like January 6th.
Mm-hmm.
That's not what America stands for.
Yes.
We are Americans. Mm-hmm. We talk, we debate, we follow democracy, and
mm-hmm.
that's what we do, period.
Mm-hmm.
The democratic and the democracy built in America, the democratic process,
mm-hmm.
is set that way to make us the greatest country in the world,
mm-hmm.
but only if we're willing to accept its customs
mm-hmm.
and its law.
Yes.
We invested our sovereignty into this social contract that we call America and
mm-hmm.
call American government,
mm-hmm.
and we need to ensure that we are doing everything possible to get elected officials who are going to hear us,
mm-hmm.
going to represent us,
mm-hmm.
and going to do the jobs of the people, not to do the jobs of special interests and backdoor deals.
Yes, yes. And that revolving door of where when you're elected and, like, you retire or you're beaten for elective office,
mm-hmm.
you go and join a special interest
mm-hmm.
and get paid a lot. Yeah, I think that door should be sealed shut.
At a
state level or a national level, because it's a conflict of interest, really.
Agreed.
You're having in Congress, for example, you know, people, you know, like giving money, dark money,
mm-hmm.
super PAC money to these candidates
mm-hmm.
and basically writing laws. Some of these elected officials don't read what are in these laws
mm-hmm.
written by a special interest.
Mm-hmm.
So it's against what people want or stand for,
mm-hmm.
you know, so... Yeah, with your campaign, it's a grassroots campaign. There's no dark money.
No.
There's strictly grassroots, which is a good thing, you know. You know, the Koch brothers had the Koch brothers had this Citizens United.
Oh yes.
What do you think about
the grassroots? You know, in my observation, I think campaigns and elections should be publicly financed.
Mm-hmm.
It's my observation that you should be given an exact same amount of money as your opponent
mm-hmm.
and may the best man win.
Yes.
You know, this isn't a place where corporations get to dictate how our democracy functions.
Mm-hmm.
They don't get to say, oh, I'm going to go give you $1 million because you're going to go vote for drilling off the shores of Alaska.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not going to go give you $1 million to go and frack
mm-hmm.
the whole United States of America.
Mm-hmm.
It's not appropriate.
Mm-hmm.
And Citizens United, what it did was it allowed for corporations and for money to beat out the actual voice of Americans.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I get very passionate about this because
mm-hmm.
it's my whole observation that money is not voice.
Mm-hmm.
And for us to see that in a legal text or to see it in some forms in our government is discounting those who do not have that voice.
Mm-hmm.
We're discounting the poor in this country, the bottom 99%, do not have the same voice as the top 1% in that instance. So at that point, those people's vote and those people's voices are being discounted to
mm-hmm.
the credit of money.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not what America was built off of.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they say you can pick yourself up by your bootstraps. Well, most Americans are picking themselves up by their ankle skin.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
and you know, my manager, I'm quoting that from her. So, you know, that's my view on Citizens United. I think it should not stand in America. I think that money should not dictate politics.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that people should be the final say.
Yes, yes. I want to talk about examples of responsible economic development,
okay.
like big box stores and their impact on rural New Mexico.
Gotcha.
Mm-hmm.
So big box stores, that's the interesting one. Because
mm-hmm.
you have a couple of issues when it comes down to big box stores. So you have rural America, which is facing one of the biggest crises relating to food scarcity. And so you have a society, you have a whole community of people that are looking to find means for food, just to get access to fresh fruits, fresh vegetables. You know, for example, Estancia, New Mexico, we don't have grocery stores. So people are either having to go to Edgewood, 45 minutes away, or go to Mountain Air, which is 30 minutes away, just to get access to fresh fruits and vegetables. So when somebody comes in and they say, oh, well, let's put this big box store here. It'll give you food and it'll bring jobs. What they're not telling you is that big box store that's coming into your rural rural community is going to drown out your Main Street businesses. So that means mom and pop shops. That means Mary and Joe's flower shop there on the corner. It means the grocery store that you may have gone to for generations because they get 20-year tax deferments to be placed in these communities. And these deferments drown out all the other businesses because they're having to foot the bill for this corporation. And then in unison with that, this corporation isn't paying people a living wage. It's not addressing the real issues we face as rural New Mexicans. We want sustainability and we want assurance that we're going to be able to live on the dimes that we work three and four jobs to get. You know, I know too many people. My manager is an example of this. You know, people work three and four jobs. My campaign manager is working two jobs right now. Just to make sure that she could keep the lights on. This is not a unique story. This is a rural New Mexico issue. This is a New Mexico issue. And this is a, you know, a working class issue, the bottom 99%. And all we're asking for is a fair shake. Stop giving tax breaks to these big corporations who come in and reap profits off the backs of us everyday working class in New Mexico.
Well, that is, that's one of the biggest problems that we have right now are the tax breaks of the corporations. And we remember in 2017 when Donald Trump and his little and his cronies in there all gave all the corporations, you know, that big tax break, and they've been paying $0 ever since. And you're right about, and you're absolutely right. I agree with you 100% that the mom and pop stores don't have a chance. And we see that happening all the time, even here in Michigan. You know, people, you know, they try to have their little stores. They're taken over by a big box store. And they're wiped out. Their family is wiped out. The jobs are wiped out. And, you know, so, yes, I agree with you 100%. That's a very good point that you came up with, Augustine.
Thank you. You know, and the other thing that we face right now that's a real that is a reality is that these big box stores have come in here and they promised these jobs, but now what are they doing? They're going fully automated. So there ain't people with jobs there.
Like, for example, Walmart with the automated, like, self-checkout.
Yeah.
Taking a job from a person who could better register, you know, I don't support things like that.
And then to touch on the food scarcity issue, you know, I get the argument sometimes in the community that, oh, well, it costs me more to shop local. Okay, well, when we really think about it, you're going to pay $10 more for this item, whatever item. Put whatever item you want. You pay $10 more at the local store than you do at the big box store. Well, that big box store is 45 minutes away. So you're going to put $20 of gas to get to this big box store to buy this item that's $10 cheaper. Well, you now pay $10 more to get that $10 cheaper item. So it's, it, you know, it evens itself out. So, you know, for anybody listening out there, shop local, help your local businesses, and make sure that Main Street businesses get a fair shake of things.
Yes, ma'am. All right. All right, we'll take a quick break. When we come back, we'll have more questions and get, hopefully, calls coming in. This is Kitchen Politics 123, and our guest is Augustine Auge Montayo. Montoya. Yes, Montoya. Sorry.
No, you're fine.
Montoya. Montoya. Augustine Montoya.
Yes,
he's running in House District 22 for the great state of New Mexico. Forgive me, you know, my grandmother was Spanish, but, you know, I speak very little Spanish. I'm Jamaican by birth, so. You know, I speak Spanglish, so to speak. All right, so we'll be back right after this. Listen to some music. Mm-hmm. Okay, welcome back, folks. We're here with Augie. He's running for District 55 and District 22. District 22, my goodness. District 22 in the great state of New Mexico. Okay, let's talk about community. Oh, before we go, let's take a call.
Hello.
Hello, Carla. Welcome to Kitchen Politics. Do you have any questions for Augie?
Well, I really like what he's been saying.
He's so articulate,
and he has his act together.
Thank you.
Hi, Susie. Hey, how
you doing,
Lori? Good.
I agree with him on the teaching, because I used to teach. And I'm here to speak back on myself. I'm not doing something right here.
I don't know if you're listening on the computer. Mm-hmm. Yes.
No, I had the other phone on. I was listening. The teaching being so hard. I was a teacher in high school and in college. And the pressure the parents put on you is the worst. Curriculum is already determined for you. You have to teach what they tell you to teach. And then you have parents coming in and say, why did you give my kid a D? He earned it, you know. So you got the pressure. The kids have to go to really good colleges, and so they put the pressure on the teacher to give the student the grades. But also the curriculum, like you were saying, on slavery and things. When I was in school, it was like a couple pages in your whole history book and scooted over. So you really, by the time you get out of school back in my day anyway, you didn't know that much. And I'm hoping things will change and educate our kids better.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yes, ma'am.
I agree.
And the thing about the term limits, too, I like that, what you were saying, like McConnell and all those that been in there for 20, 30 years. They're 88. They got to be going. Plus, I was upset when the Supreme Court made the ruling that businesses are people too and can give as much as they want to the politicians. I think that ruined everything because, mm-hmm. like pharmaceutical companies and so forth, they have bought and paid for our Congress.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
My daughter's a diabetic. And her insulin went from $40 a vial back 40 years ago and it's the same thing now, and it's over $300 a vial. That's ridiculous.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. So I took a couple courses while at the University of New Mexico, and one was dealing with healthcare policy and insurance policy, and the other one was dealing with government regulation. And right now what you're seeing is that these private companies have come in and contracted with the federal government, and now they're turning a profit. But the government's not doing its job in regulating these industries and making sure that we're keeping medicine, necessary life-saving medicine, cost-effective for our everyday Americans. And in this country right now, we have to really focus on the fact that, you know, a sick labor workforce does not lead to economic gain. So even if you're looking at health insurance and health care's impact on the economy, that's one point you get to look at, is that if people are getting sick and can't afford to get better, then you're going to have a workforce that doesn't come to work. Mm-hmm. And so it's just not going to work in a space where those two things aren't being worked on, making sure that, you know, insurance companies aren't only insuring the healthy, that they're also doing their jobs and insuring every American. And then also making sure that the companies that are producing these drugs, which haven't changed in cost over the last who knows how many years, aren't able to then gouge purchasers and consumers because they're not being regulated. I understand
exactly.
that. Exactly. You know,
I agree. I mean, I have relatives in Europe and Canada, and the insulin's $40 in both those places. Don't tell me that the pharmaceuticals are giving it away.
Yeah. Well, no. See, and that's the thing is that a lot of those drugs have the same components, haven't gone up in price to create, and there's no reason that our everyday people should be subject to these profit-seeking institutions that aren't doing the work of the people and making sure that our people are healthy. That's the purpose in medicine, making sure you're healing people, not making sure you're turning a profit off people.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they can yes. make profit. Everybody has to, but not ridiculous. I mean, well, they put that one guy in jail, didn't they, for raising his the EpiPen 500%?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Where he belongs.
Yes.
Yeah, and the term limits. I mean, that's important. We need to get rid of that. Michigan has shorter term limits on their people mm-hmm. now. It has to be, I think, long enough where they learn and can progress, but not be in there for life. No way.
No. Absolutely.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it's accountability, you know, because as we were talking about dark money getting into politics, it gives these institutions and these special interests too much room over that period of time to either whittle down at the morale of these elected officials or to utilize them over long spans of time to vote in the interests of, you know, their business, their corporations, the big pharma industry, and other industries that really aren't doing the job of the people.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to see elections be more like in England. I think they have 3 or 4 months of where you can campaign, and then they put a ceiling on how much money you can spend. and that's it.
Yeah.
And then they get free TV time that's like a public service announcement. And so it's a level playing field. And then, you know, they're not already branded by the time they get in office by who they owe money to.
Agreed. And, you know, I think that's part of what we were touching on when we talked about Citizens United is that, you know, right now in America, money is voice. And for us to fix that culture and for us to fix that system, we have to be willing to bite the bullet when it comes to regulating elections and regulating how much money goes into elections. And that's why I'm a big proponent of public financing. I think that, you know, the money that goes into campaigns should be a set amount. So that way, you know, when we get college kids running for office, we're on the same playing field as people who are career politicians running for office and not having to start from ground zero when our opponents have hundreds of thousands of dollars put in the bank.
Millions. If you look at the politicians in Congress now, I mean, they're multimillionaires. Where'd they get it? Not off their paycheck. I think, you know, I'm kind of mean. I think they shouldn't. They should have the same amount of money that people on Social Security and Medicare have, and call it good there, because they, you know, I'm sure they don't have to worry about whether you eat or have an insulin shot, right? So there's got to be something better. But you're asking these guys, the fat cats, to rule themselves. They're not going to do that. How do we get rid of them?
Well, and that's part of government regulation that I think is important, is for us to really look at that market and determine the best way to approach a form of regulation that allows us to get onto a system that is amicable and accessible for every American. It's my view that, you know, we pay our fair share of taxes, and it's time that our taxes start working for us.
Exactly. Yes. And, I mean, the Republicans are ridiculous. They didn't even want to vote for infrastructure and then went to their home base and said, oh, look, I got you a new bridge, when they didn't even vote for it. They are doing nothing. I mean, to put our new Supreme Court justice, who was so overqualified, they didn't even vote for him, and they walked out of the room. How can you change that sense of craziness?
I think a lot of this change starts on the ground floor with everyday people, finding people in these communities who are brought up in these communities and have built that trust with the people and know how to bring forward the issues that all of us are facing here on the ground. Because I really think that the smoke and mirrors that goes on in D.C. and the smoke and mirrors present in American politics up and down, it allows too much room for people to get away with saying the least. Too many platitudes, too much optics goes into it rather than the actual hard work of organizing. Because, you know, my campaign manager, Margarita, was, I think, present for this conversation with my grandmother of when you're community organizing, what you build during that period of organizing or through that duration of organizing should stand after you're gone. And a lot of times these electeds get into office and there's nothing there. There's no constituent service. There's no organization. And now I get it. In New Mexico, we are a volunteer civilian legislature, which needs to change. We need to be a professional full-time paid legislature. But in unison with that comes the fact that we also need to be willing to be in community, be around the people. Because for me, you know, I'm running for the House of Representatives, and I run up and down the street in the morning at 5 o'clock every day. So people get to see me. They get to know, oh, that's where Augustine lives. I can go over there and ask him about this issue I'm having. Whereas most of the time you see politicians get elected and they go cab themselves up somewhere where people can't find them.
Exactly. You never see the local people. I mean, they get elected and you never see them again.
Absolutely. Nor do they answer their phone.
Yes, one. We have another caller on the line. Welcome to Kitchen Politics 123. Go ahead, caller. You want to say anything?
Hello. Hi. I just was hearing you mention about institutional racism, and I was thinking back. I went to high school back in the 70s, you know, practically the dark ages. But I remember, you know, growing up, we had state history. We had United States history. I decided to broaden out, and I took world history in high school. Turns out it wasn't world history. It was Western European history, or as I kept getting in trouble for calling it, white people history. And I said, you know, during these 400 or 500 years through the Middle Ages, the only time South America or anybody else was mentioned was when the British or the Spanish went out and colonized it. All right, so you really mean to tell me absolutely nothing happened in China all this time? Nothing happened in Australia? Nothing happened in Africa? Nothing happened in China? You know, China built incredible cities and had an amazing civilization. What about Southeast Asia? Oh, no, no, this is, you know, this is not all we need to know. But that's why we focus on white people, is because that's what we were taught was important. You know, the only anybody else was mentioned was in correlation to being owned by white countries. And it just was insane, and they couldn't seem to understand. You know, it wasn't until I got in college and I was able to take Chinese history. But that's just one country out of hundreds. And there's so much we don't know. I mean, I was reading a little thing on Facebook today, and these people had traveled to Spain, and they were all annoyed because all the people there were speaking Spanish, and the food was all Spanish. Like, well, you're in Spain. What the hell did you expect? But we really have made ourselves the center of the world to the point where we don't think anybody else existed. I mean, the white settlers came to America, which was inhabited by millions of Native Americans. But they discovered it. You know, how do you discover somebody else's home? It'd be like me going down the street and saying, I like this house better. I'm going to go in there and discover that, you know, kick those people out and take it over. It's just not how civilization is supposed to work. But yet that's what we based our knowledge of the world on, is only what the white people did. And I just think it's ridiculous. There were amazing, amazing architectural things that went on in other parts of the world, of certain, I mean, just incredible stuff that happened in other places that we know nothing about. And we're content to leave it at that because it works in our favor.
Well,
anyway, I wanted to toss that out.
And, you know, I think it's a very great point, and I think it's a good conversational point. Because when we talk about institutional racism, I like to put in the analogy of the building of a house, right? America's house is built off of racism. It's built off of the oppression of people of color. And, you know, they built the walls or the system off of that same foundation. And now you have a whole building that is racist. It's a racist institution, and it and systematically and by means of application. And it's racist. And so the only way you deal with these racist institutions and these racist systems is to get rid of those foundations and to get rid of those systems that make the walls of that building, because you can paint over those walls, but the racism will continue to bleed through. It's not going to change just because we change the color or what it looks like.
And that is how so many people don't acknowledge the concept of I don't know, what do they call it, white privilege, because to them that's how everybody lives. This is the only thing we've ever studied, and this is perfectly normal. If you just act like we act, then you'll all be treated the same way. But that's not true, not even remotely true. But that's what we see, because that's all we've been taught about. That's all we've ever experienced.
Yes. I wish Susan from Michigan would call back. You know, I was hoping she'd stay on the line and everything. You know, thank you for calling in. You could stay on the line. Okay, so with the nomination confirmed, for the next Superior Court Justice. We want to thank people like Mitt Romney, Susan Collins from Maine, and Lisa Murkowski from Alaska for voting with Democrats to confirm her. You know, so there is hope, you know, that, you know, there can be bipartisanship happening in the United States Senate. You know, so do you, if and when elected to this office of State House 22, do you hope to do you have further political aspirations, or for now you just, you know, want to concentrate on a local statewide level?
So, you know, for me, I think it's more important the quality of work that I do in this position before considering another position. I did run for county commission in 2020, and then I did end up running now for House. But I only did that because this district is the district that it is. You know, when we were in District 50 with Representative Matthew McQueen, I committed to waiting until he would, had made his decision to retire or to leave the legislature, then I would run. So this is kind of just one of those, oh, wow, okay, now I'm in a district that encompasses my home. I can run for this district and do some good work. And so for me, to in short, I don't know. It's going to depend on what I get done here, because I take this job very seriously. And I take it very seriously because when elected, the people will have consigned their sovereignty into me to do a job.
Yes.
And the quality of that job will determine if I move forward. And that's going to be, you know, by a jury of my peers. My people and New Mexicans will get to make that decision. So in short, I don't know.
Let's talk about careers of service now. When the pandemic hit, you did work in terms of getting businesses, you know, organized and having a network. Tell us about that.
So when I ran for Torrance County Commission, I started in 2019 in October. So I just turned 20 in July. Or, I turned 20 in July. I already forget how old I am. and so 2019, I went through the campaign, the pandemic hit. And once the pandemic hit, I understood that campaigning and handing out cards, yes, is important, but I needed to take into consideration the profound effects of what this pandemic was going to do. So I delivered food boxes. Rather than going out and saying, hey, my name is Augustine, vote for me, it was, hey, my name is Augustine, do you need help accessing food? And so I got my volunteers organized. We put together about 500 food boxes. I partnered and worked with Help New Mexico to deliver food boxes throughout my community. And we connected people who just could not get out to get to that food with that. Now, did that hurt me in the election? Yes. I did lose, but I'm proud to say that even though I lost, I still put my people before politics. And in unison with that, I took it a step further, started a Facebook health group. I think it was Torrance County COVID-19 Resource Group on Facebook, where we just shared business resources or you know, food accessibility, things like that through the pandemic. And through there, we organized businesses to access resources like PPP loans and, you know, financial assistance and to make sure that they were able to receive the needed help to make it through the pandemic.
And let's talk about agriculture now. In New Mexico, corn,
pinto beans,
and one more thing, chili. Those are the three top sellers in New Mexico. You know, like, you know, you could tell us about, like, the farming. You know, what are your plans for farmers? Like, when you're in a rural district, what's your plans?
So agriculture is a big part of my community. We have a lot of kids who really enjoy FFA, 4-H. We also have children and youth who like to work with their hands. And for me, agribusiness, being the center of our economy, is something that does have to take the forefront, whether that's water conservation or leading the way in regenerative practice needs to be something that we're focused on here in the state of New Mexico. I mean, being a water poor state, we can't continue wastefully using water. We need to make sure that we're doing everything possible to get farmers and ranchers the needed resources to convert onto renewable means of, and regenerative means, of farming and ranching.
Mm-hmm.
Not that they're not doing their best now. You know, a lot of it, the concern is the cost. Mm-hmm. But I think that there's a way for us as a state to say, hey, this is a compelling governmental interest
mm-hmm.
to get our farmers onto a practice that's going to save our water in the long term.
Yes.
And so for businesses, particularly in House District 22, we have a lot of pinto bean growers. And, you know, I raced in the Bean Valley
mm-hmm.
conferences. I did the pinto bean parade in Moriarty,
mm-hmm.
As well as things like pumpkin chunkin', corn. You could go to, you know, corn maze, mazes.
Right.
It's really fun. And those
mm-hmm.
businesses have a real problem
mm-hmm.
coming their way if we're not conscientious of things like climate
yeah.
change,
mm-hmm.
things like bringing and protecting our water, bringing legislation forward that truly takes into consideration what's going to be happening
mm-hmm.
if we do nothing,
mm-hmm.
if we continue to sit idly by. And the reason that I bring this up is because when you hear anything that I'm talking about here, whether it's related to agribusiness or not,
mm-hmm.
it's not partisan.
Mm-hmm.
You know, climate change is something that's going to happen whether you're a Republican or a Democrat.
Yes.
You know, your well's going to go dry whether or not you're a Republican or a Democrat.
Mm-hmm.
Roads and infrastructure, those are not partisan. They don't choose a side.
Mm-hmm.
Politicians do.
Yes.
And so when we cast our votes for people looking in agriculture, looking in our water issues, looking into all of these issues that I brought up today,
mm-hmm.
we need to elect people who are going to listen to the people
yes.
and not necessarily pick a side. And again, I'm a Democrat. I will always be a Democrat. I fundamentally agree with the platform
mm-hmm.
for the most part. I do have some disagreements. But,
mm-hmm.
you know, for the most part, I agree. I'm a Democrat.
Mm-hmm.
But I also understand that I still inhabit this space with Republicans.
Yes.
And for us to open lines of communication, we can't do it out of a sense of fear emotion,
mm-hmm.
anger, aggression, mm-hmm. those fear-based emotions. We have to use a love-based approach.
Yes.
And it's the understanding that I may want to look at you and just scream and rip my hair out of my head because I so fundamentally disagree with you. But, oh, I love you.
Mm-hmm.
You're my neighbor. I love you.
Mm-hmm. You know, but it's sort of hard because, for example, in D.C. and on Capitol Hill,
mm-hmm.
you know, Mitch McConnell, we'll come back to him,
mm-hmm.
where it's my way or the highway. Give him 99.9% of what I want
mm-hmm.
and to hell with you.
Mm-hmm.
When they're in the majority, that's what happened.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think Democrats are too, like, what's the word for it? They play, like, softball.
You know, and those are, when it comes to politics, that's, you know, sometimes it does need to be done. Sometimes you need to play hardball,
mm-hmm.
and you play hardball because that's what's in the interest of your constituent.
Mm-hmm.
I take it back to the point of community organizing.
Mm-hmm.
I think if we, as people seeking to be elected into office, were to do better jobs at communicating with our people,
mm-hmm.
we would have a more reflective image
mm-hmm.
in Congress of what America looks like today.
Yes.
Because, you know, when you're adherent to the people and you live amongst the people,
mm-hmm.
you know, when you are, you go to the grocery store, you go walk down the street, say hi to your neighbors,
mm-hmm.
you're not in an exclusive neighborhood where it's only other politicians in this neighborhood or however you're living as these big-time politicians,
mm-hmm.
it really grounds you in reality
mm-hmm.
that the guy on the corner of the street is actually homeless. This is what my policies have done as a Republican, as a Democrat. You get to see the actual on-the-ground impact. Because I've lived those impacts. I've lived what the products of American government have done.
Mm-hmm.
And I can tell you I'm not proud. And that's not a Democrat-Republican issue. That's
mm-hmm.
a human observation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, watching my fellow students struggle
mm-hmm.
to find opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
Watching teachers struggle to make sure that their students have access to things like clay to make a clay pot.
Mm-hmm.
Those are real struggles that I've lived here in the district and I've seen throughout the country,
yes.
But have really, really gotten to experience as a working class person who's lived in poverty my whole life.
Mm-hmm.
And tying it back to agribusiness, these businesses offer that opportunity,
mm-hmm.
offer that connect, but we have to be willing to do it in a responsible way.
Yes, yes. I want to touch back on the big box stores, but before I do that, you know, I want you to think about this question, and at the end of the show, you could, before the end of the show, you could give your thoughts on a unifying message from the Democratic Party.
Okay.
What would it be? You know, you could think about that. But, you know, back to this big box stores. The politicians never talk about the major cons. Yes, they bring jobs, but number one, 80 to 90% of the employees don't make a living wage. and seldom work more than 25 to 30 hours per week. And they're still qualifying for Medicaid and food stamps. You know, second point, these stores come in at loss leader pricing, making it impossible for independent small businesses to compete. And the case of the Walmart in Edgewood, it literally contributed to the eventual closure of the majority of Main Street businesses, like you were talking about earlier, where the mom-and-pop stores closed.
Yeah.
From, you know, flower shops to grocery stores in Torrance County. You know, so minimum wage, this state, New Mexico, will raise it to $15 an hour. That's a start, yeah, but you think there should be more than $15 an hour?
In my observation, you know, we have to account for the inflation of the cost of living in America, and, mm-hmm. and particularly here in New Mexico. You know, people come out here because it's not expensive. Mm-hmm. I mean, in comparison to California, mm-hmm. the East Coast, it's relatively cheap to live here.
Mm-hmm.
But when we look at the cost of living
mm-hmm.
for the majority of Torrance County citizens, to take for example,
mm-hmm.
we're not doing what needs to be done.
Yes.
So I did a budget based on the median income in Torrance County, which is $35,000 high, so like $800. I'll give them $36 whenever I did it.
Mm-hmm.
So at $36,000 a year,
mm-hmm.
with $1,500 of rent,
mm-hmm.
and a $300 a month budget for food,
mm-hmm.
people were still at the end of the year $859 behind.
Mm-hmm.
So that means you're not able, you are making a choice between paying your electric bill,
mm-hmm.
paying your gas bill, and paying your rent. And you're still behind. So then what does that lead to the next year? That leads to an increase in that debt, that
mm-hmm.
indebtedness.
Mm-hmm.
And so for us to really start to account for these real practical issues that New Mexicans and Americans are facing,
mm-hmm.
yes, we have to increase the rate of pay,
mm-hmm.
but we also have to increase our response
mm-hmm.
to making sure that they are able to stay home.
Mm-hmm.
And what I mean by stay home is that those businesses and those opportunities are at home.
Yes.
For Torrance County, the median drive time to get to work is 30 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
For me, whenever I was working the session, my median drive time was an hour and a half,
mm-hmm.
one way.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was all to get an opportunity
mm-hmm.
To learn this process, to be able to fix and help people
mm-hmm.
and to help my community. I learned through this process,
mm-hmm.
through this employment opportunity. So I did the undertaking of driving 3+ hours every day.
Right.
But in doing so, I also came to understand that that's not feasible for everybody
because
mm-hmm. the budget I talked about did not include gas to get to work.
Exactly.
It didn't include gas. It didn't mm-hmm. include things like insurance.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's only so much that a person can handle before they get to a breaking point.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're pushing the envelope when it comes to things like big box stores who don't want to pay a full-time living wage,
mm-hmm.
Who don't want to do things like provide comprehensive benefits to their employees.
Mm-hmm.
I think that us as a government, we have a real obligation to make sure that people have access
mm-hmm.
and that we're raising the wage in a way that's responsible as well to our Main Street business.
Okay, cool. Lori, you had a question?
Yes, I do have a little question.
Mm-hmm.
You sound like you're such a busy young man and you're so well-rounded. Traveled, etc. What do you do to relax and enjoy life?
Sorry?
What do you do to relax and enjoy life?
Oh,
it's working.
Gotcha. So I set aside time
mm-hmm.
every day in the morning
mm-hmm.
to be able to recenter myself. I take personal time,
mm-hmm.
Which I think is the right of any employee or volunteer. You have the right to take personal time to recenter, realign yourself. And so for me, what I do to you know, relax is either I'm doing yoga,
mm-hmm.
I'm working out, probably running,
mm-hmm.
or I'm bird watching, I'm doing photography,
right.
I'm outdoors.
Mm-hmm.
I don't actually have a TV in my room either.
Mm-hmm.
I read. And so, like, you know, if I do have – the closest thing to a TV I have is my iPad, which every once in a while I'll get on and watch YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
But if I'm not mm-hmm. reading legislation and I'm not working, it's yoga, it's running, it's gardening, because
mm-hmm.
I love to work with my hands. I'm part of my community who works with their hands every day.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, gardening,
mm-hmm.
being attached to the earth, giving
okay.
back, and really being involved and aware right in the moment is what I do to relax and what
oh,
I do to take my time.
Yes, yes.
Just all of that is so, you know, all of that is so important in life. you know, not just work, just a little bit of relaxation and enjoying. And it sounds like you are doing the right things to do that. And I love yoga, by the way.
That's hey, awesome. Well, so I do yoga with Adrian on YouTube.
Yeah, when I lived in Florida, I did yoga myself, you know. Yeah, but yoga is a hard thing.
Yoga's
yeah.
not
yeah.
as easy as it looks, trust
too.
Me.
Mm-hmm.
Not
yeah.
as easy as it looks.
Mm-hmm. Yes, ma'am.
Pretty hard.
So,
mm-hmm.
so back to that question, what is your unified message to the New Mexico Democratic Party and the National Democratic Party? How can we win the midterm elections? How can we win statewide? Because it's a blue state, but we don't want to take anything for granted.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Agreed. And the one message that I would give, mm-hmm. to the, because they're two different messages. New Mexico Democratic Party receives one, and then DPN receives another. I think that they have two different priorities.
Mm-hmm.
My message to the New Mexico Democratic Party is if you want to win these midterm elections, not just for Democrats, but for qualified and capable leaders,
mm-hmm.
we have to do what you know has been coined, mm-hmm. meet the people where the people are.
Yes.
Bring leaders mm-hmm. forward from the communities that they are from
mm-hmm.
and allow them to represent the values that they live and experience every day.
Mm-hmm.
Bring forward leaders who are going to speak the word of the people.
Mm-hmm.
There's no more of this divisiveness in my observation in the evolution of things here in New Mexico. Mm-hmm. There's not going to be room for this divisiveness.
Mm-hmm.
We
mm-hmm.
have to approach it as a humanitarian, benevolent act.
Mm-hmm.
Whether, you know, and, you know, maybe I'm taking it from the lack of being scared or the lack of, you know, I guess it's the lack of, gosh, I don't even know what the proper word is. I just, dauntless, I guess, is that, we have to take a dauntless approach.
Oh, okay.
Dauntless. We have to take a dauntless approach.
Mm-hmm.
Don't be afraid to go up to that Republican
mm-hmm.
and have a tough conversation
mm-hmm.
because it makes us stronger.
Mm-hmm.
It gives us, so, you know, it gives us grit. And so.
Yeah, true. But what I find myself when I try to speak to a Republican,
mm-hmm.
usually it's a Trump Republican or QAnon Republican,
mm-hmm.
and you know they tend to like trying to scream over you,
mm-hmm.
and it's really frustrating having a conversation, like,
yeah.
a tough conversation with them.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
now,
so
you know, with when I think about a unified message, that really
mm-hmm.
wasn't what I was thinking. I feel the Democratic Party has a problem with messaging in general. I feel
mm-hmm.
like the Republicans are all in lockstep together when they speak. When they talk
exactly.
for 1 week solid, they're all talking about bad teachers, or they're all talking about Joe Biden has raised the gas prices, or Joe Biden has, I don't know if I'm making my point, but they all talk in lockstep. I don't feel that the Democrats have the same way of the
mm-hmm.
same way and to, or technique, I should say, to kind of brainwash people. And it's a terrible thing to say, but Republican Party is doing. They're brainwashing their constituents or brainwashing people to think
mm-hmm.
that, oh, Joe Biden is the one that's raising the gas prices. But they have a cohesive, unified message, and I don't think Democrats do. We're always, I feel like we're always a step behind putting out fires. How do we get a step in front so that we can not have to put out a fire, but maybe start a fire for them to put out for a change?
Mm-hmm.
Does that
gotcha.
Make sense to you?
Yes, and sorry I misunderstood the question. So for
that's
me,
okay. No, it's okay. That's fine.
I think the unified
I'm a
message.
More, you know, go ahead.
Sorry. So for our New Mexico Democratic Party, I think that we have a chair who is receptive. I think that she's aware.
Mm-hmm.
And for the campaigns moving forward, I think that she's more prepared to look at how we can tighten up our message to specific communities and really move forward in a way that tailors our platform into a community-specific approach. And I think that's where us as Democrats are really lagging, is that we are the mother party, quote-unquote. We're the bleeding heart, is what's
mm-hmm.
said.
Mm-hmm.
But
right.
we don't direct it in a way that in my observation, is going to be, you know, that one step ahead.
Mm-hmm.
The way that we do that is we bring the people in, we allow them to set the agenda, and we utilize that agenda to then build campaigns that are effective.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, you get people running for office in the state of New Mexico sometimes that they just don't have the knowledge base to be able to know how to get onto that same message,
mm-hmm.
or they don't know what that same message is. And so, you know, also adding in a training component here in New Mexico that allows
mm-hmm.
our candidates to be aware of, oh, this is what we're looking at moving forward. This is the agenda. This is the message. And the message is love and compassion.
Mm-hmm.
The message is moving together, moving forward together. For the DNC, I think that the unified message is is expanding and expansion. And I think that that's something that candidates need to be talking about up and down the ballot, because whether it's expansion of broadband internet into rural America, or the expansion of
mm-hmm.
our economy to benefit from the bottom 99% instead of the top 1% or corporations in this country,
mm-hmm.
I think that that's the unified message that we need to be looking at, is expansion.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, we're always expanding our consciousness, whether that's learning new things or that's learning new tools to deal with emotions.
Mm-hmm.
We're always expanding, and that's the nature of people.
Mm-hmm.
So if we want to mm-hmm. get a step ahead, we have to look at how we are going to impact the community overall
mm-hmm.
and not necessarily just our base. One of the quotes that I heard, and I use this all the time, is we need to
okay.
stop preaching to the choir
mm-hmm.
and start serving the congregation.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I like right. that.
Mm-hmm.
I'll thank Spike
a
Murphy for that
message.
One.
Pardon?
Oh, I'm thanking Spike Murphy for that one. He gave me that quote.
Mm-hmm. Yes, man. So we'll
I
have,
like that quote.
We'll have 7 minutes left. So, you know, what's your final thoughts, last pitch to maybe people who are listening, who are independent, you know, and your voter base? What message do you have for them?
My name is Agustin Montoya. I'm from Tajique, New Mexico. Yo soy de la Sierra. And I'm running for New Mexico House District 22 because I love you. I'm running for New Mexico House District 22 because I hear you. And just because I'm in House District 22 does not mean that if you live outside the district, I'm not going to hear you. Let's work together to get the job done for us. This one's for us. So let's vote to keep our representation how we like our pinto beans homegrown. Again, my name is Agustin Montoya. I'm running for New Mexico House District 22. I'm 22 years old, and I'm proud to be one of us.
Yes, well said, well said.
Thank you so
yes,
much.
Ma'am.
Thank you so
mm-hmm.
much, Agustin.
And, mm-hmm.
Thank you.
And could,
website, you
could,
oh, go ahead, Lori.
Well, I was just going to ask him that question about the website, where to donate,
mm-hmm.
et cetera.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the website is www.anm4nm.com. The email address
mm-hmm.
is info@anm4nm.com. And you can donate at secure.atblue.com/donate/Agustin Montoya4, New Mexico. And the campaign office is 505-620-4539. So feel free to call. The number 505-620-4539. You know, it's a vibrant grassroots campaign, and
mm-hmm.
he can win this. He's in sort of a conservative district, but I think he has a cohesive message, and the people,
yeah.
you know, are interested, and I think he can win this district. Yes, ma'am.
Agustin?
Mm-hmm.
Agustin?
Yes, ma'am.
Mm-hmm. Yes, ma'am. I want to wish you the best of luck. I think that you are awesome. I love everything
you.
That you said. And I wish you were in Michigan because I would be helping you.
Thank you. You know, hey,
so,
let's work together and let's find you guys a candidate up there that can give your message.
Oh, you don't even know what we need here. It's bad here where I live. So it's pretty bad. but I wish, like I said, I wish you the best of luck. And I'm going to be donating to your campaign, by the way.
Thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you. It goes such
no
a
problem.
Long way. It goes such a long way. I really
I know.
Appreciate your help.
Mm-hmm,
no
mm-hmm.
problem.
Yes, ma'am. Yes. Okay, so You could like us on Facebook. We're at facebook.com/kitchenpolitics123. And Augie's website, again, to donate is secure.actblue.com/donate. Augustine Montoya, the number 4, New Mexico. The email address is info@anm4nm.com. And the website is www.anm4nm.com. So, Augustine, good luck in the campaign, and I'll be happy to help with whatever I can do. You know, if it's going door-to-door, phone banking, anything you need, you know, I'm here.
Thank you.
Yes,
thank
man.
You.
Yes, man. It's a four-hour drive.
And,
worth
and
it.
Augustine, would Augustine mm-hmm. be want to come back on the show? He's welcome back on the show as time goes on. We would love to hear your progress and how it's going. You're welcome back
thank
anytime.
You. Mm-hmm. Yes, ma'am, and I really appreciate you guys. Mm-hmm. I hope to be back on, and I hope mm-hmm. to, you know, really bring you guys some comprehensive growth mm-hmm. as well as some new
yes.
information and, you know, give you guys some good updates.
Yes, ma'am. One
absolutely.
Last question. One last question. Mm-hmm. When you die and you reach a pearly gates of heaven, what would you want God to say? I mean, it's a long time from now, but, you know.
For me, in my observation, mm-hmm. what I would like God to say is that I had an impact
mm-hmm.
on my people, that mm-hmm. I did something for us
mm-hmm.
and something that brought us forward in
mm-hmm.
some way,
mm-hmm.
whether it was direct or indirectly by means of my actions and whether or not I get recognition or anything, because that's not why I'm here.
Mm-hmm.
So just that I made a good impact on my people.
Yes, yes. Positive change, growth, development. Yes. All right, everybody. Thanks, Susan in Michigan, for calling. Thank Lynn in New Mexico for calling. Woo. And the other person who didn't say anything, we thank you for calling as well. This has been Kitchen Politics for April 14th, 2022. Our guest was Augustine Montoya. He's running for District 22 in New Mexico House of Representatives. Until next week, same time, same place. This is David Franklin in New Mexico.
This is Lori Picka in Michigan. Everyone have a good evening, and thank you so much for being on the show. I enjoyed it thoroughly. Thank you. Good night, all.
Oh, and that's a wrap.
Yep. You're off. Mm-hmm.